Their romance is forbidden from the beginning.
They loved each other enough that he was willing to sacrifice his career because he knew he could get fired for that.
Mike Dixiano and Angela Neal throw caution aside, and their wedding bells drown out the scandal.
I thought I had a pretty good judge of character.
Until vices long buried come back from the dead.
She hinted at it, but I don't know for a fact that she was a prostitute.
There were some skeletons in his closet, for sure.
And demons from the past push one of them over the edge.
It makes me sick to my stomach. How could somebody do that to somebody they supposedly love?
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. Anchorage, Alaska, the northernmost big city in the U.S., a state where people come to start over, or sometimes to disappear.
People will end up coming here because they're either running from something or they have some reason that they're leaving their family behind. I think Alaska, in a lot of people's minds, offers that escape, whether it's for a vacation or it's for their life.
Take Angela Neal, a free spirit from Washington State who loves to pick up and go.
Oh, Angela? She was great. She was her own person, and that's why I liked her so much. She was game for anything.
Just seemed full of life. A huggy person. From the minute you meet her, you get a hug, you know, that type of person. She was wild, but she wasn't afraid to tackle anything.
Always in search of the next big adventure, Angela first comes to Alaska to work on a cannery boat.
She also worked on crab boats in Dutch Harbor. You know, the deadliest catch type, that's what she did.
She loved life. She loved it.
Angela's very tough, in more ways than one.
She was weathered. She looked like she had seen a lot.
Angela, you know, touched on it, that she had had drug issues.
Not to mention four ex-husbands and a drinking problem. She's been in and out of jail and mental health facilities.
I know she was bipolar. She was on medication at one point when we first met her, and she'd been on it for, I think she said, 15 years. But for what she'd gone through, she was still just a beautiful person inside.
She was who she was, and she wasn't sorry about it.
Now, at the age of 40, Angela wants to keep her demons at bay. She's quit working on cannery and crab boats and is focusing her time on getting clean.
I do believe that she tried to look forward because every day was a new adventure to her. And she told us, you're who you are and accept you who you are because not all of us are the perfect people.
Angela enrolls in a program run by the Salvation Army to help people with dual diagnoses, meaning both substance abuse and mental health issues. Which is how Angela Neal comes to meet Mike Dixiano, a counselor at two Anchorage clinics.
He worked with clients, is what he called them.
Mike comes with the right qualifications, a degree from Notre Dame University and 11 years' experience as a counselor in Valdez, Alaska. Mike starts out as Angela's counselor, but before long, she becomes much more to him.
A client and other things, I was shocked.
Mike and Angela start a secret relationship, despite strict rules against it.
That surprised me.
But secrets seem to have a way of coming out. And when Mike and Angela's secret is revealed, it spells trouble for Mike's career. And around town, tongues are a-wagging.
You know, because that's taboo. You're not supposed to do that. And I was shocked. I really was. Well, that's a professional boundary you don't step over, and I could see why he was fired.
Mike loses both of his jobs, but he's so smitten with Angela that he doesn't seem to care.
There's two ways to think about it. One that I'd like to think of is that they loved each other enough that he was willing to sacrifice his career for that because he knew he could get fired for that. The other way is to take advantage of somebody, which I really don't want to think of it that way. I want to think that he really did care for her, really did love her.
But relationship expert Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell see challenges ahead for a relationship that is founded on a serious lapse in judgment.
Whenever a rehab relationship involves a patient and a counselor, that's a situation in which exploitation is happening, is unethical, is bad for the patient, is bad care, should never happen.
The way the power hierarchy is set up, because he is her counselor and she is the patient, makes him in charge. Mike is the kind of guy who wants to be the hero. He wants to come in and save the day and look like the good guy, and so he feels like he can do that by taking care of her. When I look at Mike and Angela, I think that they are both very needy individuals. They both desire attention in different ways, and so I think they come together as people who, in some ways, are filling each other's holes.
I disagree on that. I see her as the needy one, and I see him as exploiting her need.
I think he needs to be needed, and that makes him needy.
I think he wants sex.
Mike and Angela marry in a small private ceremony. He's 57, and she's 40.
I thought it was great, because he seemed to be outgoing, she was outgoing. He seemed to care an awful lot about her.
The newlyweds have a lot in common, including a love of classic cars.
There you go, that's me.
He and Angela were in this Corvette club here in Anchorage.
They also joined the 49th State Street Rodder Car Club with her good friend, Kelly Scheitenhelm.
During car shows, we would register people, and her and I would have the best fun. Yeah, we'd run around and make fun of all the, you know, the Ford guys or the Chevy guys. Yeah.
Angela loves to show off her blue Corvette called the Blue Lady.
Oh, my. That was a pretty Corvette.
And that was her baby. They fit really well together.
Mike and Angela also love to travel. And on one memorable trip to Hawaii, he helps her realize a lifelong ambition.
Her dream was to swim with dolphins. So Mike had taken her to Hawaii, and she got to swim with the dolphins, which is totally awesome. So it's a special place for them.
She loved dolphins. She had them all over the house.
She also loves dogs. And when Mike's Basset Hound dies, it's not long before they look to adopt a new one. They adopt a puppy from Nancy and her then-husband, Curtis, who live in Soldotna, Alaska, a few hours' drive from Anchorage.
We had a litter of Basset Hounds. She climbed on the dog bed and sat with the dogs on the dog bed. She was in love. I think they spent 4 hours there, and then they took Peyton home.
New Basset Hound Peyton becomes part of the family.
She loved her Bassets and she loved her dolphins. You know, I felt really good my dog going to these people.
The new family thrives until Mike and Angela find out that neither of them are who they say they are.
It was just a lifestyle that could not be explained.
She's been arrested for prostitution. He's going to confront her crack dealer and his guns. It started to look shady.
Mike Dixiano is fired from two jobs as a counselor in Anchorage, Alaska, for his forbidden romance with patient Angela Neal. But by late 2006, the scandal has pretty much blown over, and the couple is happily married. Just 1 month after they wed, Mike and Angela move out of their modest house into a much larger home on Lake Ridge Circle. The couple is living surprisingly well for two people who aren't working.
Mike seemed to start spending the money on a variety of different things. And I would say that his lifestyle became more extravagant.
There was a house that was bought in a nice neighborhood. There were regular trips to Hawaii to fancy resorts. There were numerous cars.
They had 5 Corvettes that I know of. They had a PT Cruiser, a Buick of some sort, and then they had an old Ford, old one.
Mike especially likes to flaunt the fact he has money.
He had a $10,000 gold watch that he liked to brag about to people.
He had a ram's head, a gold watch band. It had a ram's head on either side, and all solid gold. You could tell he dyed his hair. That's the only way I could explain it. He went to a tanning bed. Angela was more down to earth, but he was more self-centered, look at me type person.
Ooh, yay, food's here.
I got it. He paid cash, always. He liked showing he had money. He didn't blink an eye.
He essentially said that he had retired in 2007. He had had a business in Hawaii that he had sold, and so he had essentially cashed out.
He had money and he had means, and so I didn't question it. You know, if that's what they wanted to do and they had the money, he'd go for it.
Even though he was fired, Mike still sees one of his former clients, a man named Sam.
Doing well. How are you doing there, Sam?
Sam is an interesting character.
He was someone that Mike met through Mike's background when he was working as a mental health counselor.
Has sort of the mental capacity of a third grader. Sam lived in this mobile home trailer.
He pays his rent on time and has never been a disruption in any way.
He knew how to take care of himself, and he sort of had to take care of himself at a certain point, but he had some issues there for sure.
I noticed the challenges when he came in to do his rental agreement. He was fine and functioning, and he always has been. No one bothers him. He doesn't bother anyone.
By 2007, Sam's father in New Jersey has been dead for about a year. His closest living relative is a cousin in Washington State.
It appears that Sam intentionally took the steps to distance himself from his family.
Angela and Mike are among Sam's few contacts, and Mike becomes a regular visitor to the trailer park to help Sam with groceries, errands, and bills.
Sam brought him in to my office to introduce him as, this is my good friend Mike Dixiano. Mike had a motorhome that he would park in Sam's driveway, and Sam would always let me know. Mike would come in to the office to pay Sam's rent for him.
Sam thought Mike and Angela were like, you know, his closest friends, that they were almost like his family.
They were obviously buddies.
Sam has developmental disabilities. He's not able to function at the highest level of capacity possible. And so Mike is being the hero, taking care of him, bringing him food, and helping him out.
This looks like a guy who puts himself in situations where he will have access to vulnerable people whom he can exploit.
Mike has a giant sign over his head that says, "Look at me." When we see someone being flashy or needing to show people up, what it means is that they're insecure on the inside, that they don't feel good enough for who they are.
I think guys like Mike do things like that to impress women initially. So might he be trying to impress a woman? Yes, but my guess would be it's not Angela anymore.
Where are you going?
I'm going out and I'm gonna come back, okay?
By the middle of 2007, signs of strain appear. Just 6 months into the marriage, Angela's addictions come back to haunt her and the couple.
Angela did continue to struggle with alcohol and substance abuse issues, and I think that led to a lot of problems between Mike and Angela.
One night, Mike is pulled over by the Anchorage police for a traffic violation.
Looking for my wife.
Does he explain that he was trying to find Angela and ultimately they smelled alcohol?
Mike stated to the officers that he was attempting to follow his wife Angela, that Angela had been smoking crack for the last 3 days and she was on her way to the crack house and he was trying to find out where that was.
He appeared to be agitated and angry at Angela.
Mike was arrested for DUI. Subsequent to his arrest, a search was conducted of the vehicle he was driving, and 3 handguns were found under the rear seat of the vehicle.
The guns are seized, but Mike gets off with a slap on the wrist. Perhaps the officer sympathizes with the fact he has a drug-addicted wife. Angela, however, is arrested several times in the coming months.
I think there was a DUI arrest. There were theft arrests for shoplifting.
She's been arrested for prostitution. He's going to confront her crack dealer, and he owns guns.
It told a lot of her demons. You know, you can't go through the hell that she did in her younger years and adult life and not have them.
But is Mike trying to stop Angela's downward spiral or help it along?
Angela was in Highland Mountain Correctional Center. During the time that she was serving her sentence, Mike was spending some time on internet dating sites meeting other women.
By 2008, Mike Dixiano's wife Angela has been arrested for prostitution on at least 2 occasions, and she's believed to be abusing both drugs and alcohol.
Please, I'm going.
It's just 2 years after they wed, and Mike oversees every little thing Angela does.
Mike's daughter, Whitney, told us that her dad was controlling over Angela.
I remember we went shopping one time, and he had given her $25 to spend.
She didn't have her own bank account. She didn't have her own credit card or debit card. She didn't have her own money. She didn't have her own vehicles in her own name. She didn't have a cell phone that was in her own. Everything that she had was paid for by Mike.
If she wanted something, it was no. But yet they still went on their Hawaii trips. They still, you know, bought cars.
Mike even keeps cash in a safe in the house, but doesn't let Angela have any access to it.
She was really living, you know, with her hand out to Mike to have the lifestyle that they had.
She didn't have any control over that money whatsoever. He controlled every bit of it.
Friends and family believe Mike is trying to protect Angela from her self-destructive impulses.
At that time, that's what I thought. Because he really harped on that. You know, she's got mental issues, she's got emotional issues. He really talked about that a lot. And I think that was his justification to us why he controlled her the way he did.
I'm gonna be back in a second, okay? I just gotta get something in the car.
There was a record of, and a report made that Angela had pawned his watch, his gold watch. If Angela needed money, she would have to ask Mike for money. And if Mike didn't give her money, Angela would have to go out and get money only no way she could.
That might have been a way for her to get around Mike to get to whatever substance she wanted to abuse.
Thank you so much.
Whatever the case, years of hard living are taking a toll on Angela's health. She has hepatitis C and issues with her pancreas, making her even more reliant on Mike.
She lost quite a bit of weight. I saw her when she's healthy, and then through the years I saw her deteriorate. In hindsight, I think it was that she had gotten back into drugs.
Drug abuse is one theory. Some friends develop another theory when they see Angela with bruises.
She was abused by him, probably physically. I believe there was a lot more conflict than anybody knew. I think it was more volatile than anybody knew.
Then, in January of 2010, bad news. Angela's father falls ill in Washington State. Angela plans to visit to support her mother during a difficult time.
Her mom knew that she had been involved in some kind of street crime type things and drugs. But there was still a lot of love there, you could tell.
And I was hoping the best for her. You always do.
But Angela never actually goes to visit her parents in Washington. She's stuck in Alaska, in jail, this time for shoplifting.
Angela was in Highland Mountain Correctional Center, and she was in there for a shoplifting charge.
She's in for the entire month of January. And while Angela's locked up, Mike is feeling very free.
During the time that she was serving her sentence, Mike was spending some time on internet dating sites meeting other women.
One of Mike's dates finds a marriage certificate with Angela's name on it. He claims he and Angela are getting a divorce.
Mike was seeking other relationships online at the same time and lying to those women about where his wife was or whether he was married or not.
But when he speaks with Angela in jail, she has no idea.
Mike meeting other women is very telling about his relationship to Angela and exactly how he felt towards Angela.
Angela gets out of jail on Valentine's Day. And despite what Mike tells his mistress about their imminent divorce, Angela moves right back in.
That beautiful dolphin all shiny.
That's my girl.
They even go and surprise their friend Kelly in Seward.
I think it was a joint decision to come down and see me, which I really loved, because it is. It's, you know, it's a 2.5-hour drive to get down there. But whatever she wanted to do, he would, you know, try to find a way to make it happen. They came down and they knocked on the window. They didn't knock on my door. She said, "Surprise." Yeah.
Surprise.
Then we sat around and talked, and then I said, "Hey, you guys want to go for a ride?" We had a great time, and he said, "I'm doing this for her, for Angela, because she really wanted to do this." We're coming back, and Mike received a call on his phone. We're in the car, and she was in the back seat, and she had told me that.
If anything happens to me, I want you to take care of Mike.
I thought, well, that's an odd thing to say. But I didn't elaborate on it. We drove out to Exit Glacier, and that was the last time I saw her, was then.
When I look at Angela and Mike's relationship at this point, I see a path to destruction.
Healthy relationships require both participants being interested in and capable of nurturing one another, helping one another get through life. Most husbands are not pleased by the idea of their wife out there prostituting herself or even just committing infidelity without there being a monetary component to it.
A lot of people would wonder how Angela and Mike could still be together after all they've been through. And to me, the answer is that they really have a codependent relationship. They need one another. There is some sort of sickness that is fed between each other, and they thrive on that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's hard for most of us to relate to the level of drama that exists in a marriage like the Dixianos.
And there's a strange twist psychologically with these two, because part of what I believe they're attracted to in each other is that they accept each other for who they are. And that makes them feel a sense of comfort, even though it's dysfunctional comfort.
2 months after Angela gets out of jail, she and Mike drive to Soldotna, Alaska, to visit their good friends, Nancy and her husband, Curtis.
Anchorage and Soldotna are about 150 miles apart, so they would come down and visit.
Welcome. The visit quickly gets out of hand.
And I don't know what happened on the way down to Soldotna, but something happened coming down to Soldotna that night, because she was completely out of character.
That was the night where things kind of got haywire for Angela.
For starters, Angela has decided to stop taking her meds because she doesn't like how numb they make her.
She's the first time in forever that she could remember that she could cry because the meds suppressed everything.
But she's clearly on something.
They came in and they dropped their stuff off in the spare bedroom because they were going to spend the night. And we sat down to dinner, and my ex-husband said something to her that just set her off. I mean, she started yelling at him and cussing at him, and what he said really didn't strike me as anything wrong. But it set her off about basically him controlling me. And she just went from there.
Yeah, screw you, you idiot.
You know, we finished dinner, we got to calm down, but the argument started up. Well, I didn't know what was wrong with her. I didn't know if she was maybe having an emotional breakdown, if she had taken something. And then my ex-husband says, that's it, you're going to the hospital. She says, I don't need to go to the hospital. My ex-husband went and got the car because we were going to put her in the back of our car and take her to hospital. Oh my God, three of us couldn't get her in that car. That's how out of control she was. I ended up sitting her back in a chair, and she slapped me hard. So we called 911 because she was completely out of control. I mean, it was completely polar opposite of what Angela usually was. I mean, I'd never seen her like that, ever. The EMS came, and the police, the state troopers, and she told those state troopers in front of Mike and in front of us. She looked at Mike and says,
I am going to tell them everything, Mike!
And she says, you're going down.
Someone is about to pay a high price for Angela's words that night.
In our database, I saw that she had approximately 26 different aliases. She had 4 different social security numbers, 4 dates of birth.
She really didn't strike me as a violent person.
Angela Dixiano threatens to expose her husband, Mike Dixiano, in front of Alaska state troopers. But if Mike is hiding something, Angela doesn't reveal the secret to anyone.
They took her to the hospital, and Mike came back to the house, and we told him, don't bring her back here, because I didn't want her in the house at that point, because she actually spooked me.
Angela spends the night in the hospital. while Mike stays with their friends, Nancy and Curtis.
And she was released the next morning. Mike picked her up.
Back in Anchorage a few weeks later, Mike has upsetting news.
They were splitting up. He said they were splitting up. They're getting a divorce. She is on her own. I gave her some money. She's getting an apartment here in Anchorage. I was hoping she'd call. She had a cell phone. It was shut off. She wouldn't answer on her Facebook. I wasn't sure if, you know, there was drug issues again or what was going on.
When you look at Angela's outburst and the threat that she made to expose Mike's secrets, it is cause for extreme concern about whether there is something there of substance to be exposed. On the other hand, people who are in the throes of active substance abuse and mental illness do make statements like that.
I think Angela reached her breaking point. She's unhappy, she's in an unhappy relationship, and despite the fact that she is dysfunctional and using drugs, she wants a happy life and she wants a way out.
Weeks go by and friends and family don't hear a peep from Angela or Mike. But that changes in June, 2 months after Angela's night in hospital, when Mike calls Angela's mother, Kathy, in Washington State with tragic news. Angela got back on drugs, and it cost her her life.
He told her mother over the phone that she had died, that she had died of organ failure related to her drug abuse.
Died from pancreatic cancer, just like Patrick Swayze died.
Angela's mother posts an obituary. Angela Dixiano is dead at just 44 years old.
She still loved Angela quite a bit, her mother did, but she had kind of given up on her, I think, and hearing that she had died wasn't a huge shock to her.
The obituary runs in the local paper in Electric City, Washington, so none of Angela's friends in Alaska see it. They learn about Angela's death abruptly, online.
Through an email. I learned it through an email. I had sent them an email and said, well, I haven't heard from you guys in a while. You know, I want to know if you guys are doing okay. And that's when Mike, over an email, said that Angela had passed away. One of my first reactions was, you know, I hate cancer. It sucks. You know, it's taking all my friends, my family. You know, and it won't stop. I was sad. I was so sad.
Some of Angela's friends organize a memorial at Point Warrensoff in Anchorage.
They were various friends and family. They had some balloons and they let them go, and it was absolutely beautiful. That's some I would have loved to go to. So.
Kelly can't make the memorial, so plans something else at the next car show.
We all got closure in our own way. I did my closure at our car show when we did our little dedication to her. It was raining. I parked my car, and Mike had told me the day before that he was going to bring down Angela's car, and I said, well, I'd love to have Angela's car next to mine. Yeah, the two kids. It was nice. I found a poem, and I found two pictures of Angela, and I made a frame. And I presented it to Mike. And he cried, and I gave him a hug, and he gave me a hug, and, you know, it was very, very emotional.
But soon, Mike moves on.
He comes down, and he had met this woman, and they were going to go to Hawaii. I thought it was a little soon, but Alaska's a different place. It gets lonely in the wintertime if you don't have somebody to talk to. And you can only talk to a dog so much.
But some say Mike's moving too quickly.
This was probably 6 months later, and we were at a car show at Mirror Lake. Somebody announced over the loudspeaker that Mike was going to get married.
Congratulations to Mike Dixiano and Coco on their engagement.
I remember me and a couple other people, we were sitting there by our cars, and we just looked at each other and went, okay. We were just shocked, pretty much. But then I thought, well, Angela did say, you know, if anything happens to me, make sure that Mike goes on with his life. I said, okay.
A lot of people wondered how Mike could move on so quickly in his personal life after losing Angela. And what I would say is that he had detached himself from her a long time ago. He had already moved on emotionally, and so once she was out of the picture, it was very easy for him to switch to someone else.
I think when you look at Mike's behavior towards Angela and his behavior toward things, it looks to me like he's actually more attached to his Corvettes than he is to Angela.
I think it's very strange that Angela died so quickly after their breakup. She had wanted out of that relationship, and so she was finally free. She was given an opportunity to go be and do whatever it was that she wanted to do. And so it makes me wonder why it would have happened so suddenly.
Now, she did have a history of substance abuse. She did have a history of mental problems. Had she supposedly committed suicide, had she supposedly overdosed, then it might have been an explanation.
I think a lot of people think to themselves, what reason would Mike have to lie? I mean, in some ways, he presents himself as such a good guy. He was a rehab counselor. He helped someone with special needs. All of these things can lead a person to believe that he's truly a good person and there would never be foul play.
Mike may have moved on, but not everyone in her life is able to do so.
I had already left Alaska when my ex-husband, out of the blue, he calls me and tells me, he says, Angela's not dead.
So several months had passed, but Kurt became more suspicious as he communicated with Mike because it just didn't add up for him.
Nancy's ex-husband, Curtis, files a missing persons report with the state troopers in Soldotna 6 months after Angela's death.
I don't want to really speculate on why Kurt waited so long to make the phone call between April and December.
My ex-husband's kind of, you would say, has a paranoid personality. He doesn't take everything at face value. Just something wasn't right. Him and Mike had gotten into a little tiff over emails, and Mike got pretty volatile in the emails and basically, in a roundabout way, threatening him. And it concerned my ex-husband enough that he made sure the doors were locked and the guns were loaded. And that's when he started thinking, just something's not right.
A state trooper in Soldotna calls Mike Dixiano directly.
When the state trooper asked Mike what had happened to Angela, Mike said Angela died in Washington State and died back in April of 2010, and that she had died from pancreatic cancer.
Then the trooper finds an obituary, which places her death in Anchorage in June, almost 2 months later.
And that was a very unusual aspect of the case from the very beginning. But there hadn't been any report under any name of Angela's in either Alaska or Washington.
There was no death certificate. None of the funeral homes had records of cremating an Angela Dixiano. And it just became even more suspicious at that point.
Two conflicting reports of Angela's death, one in Washington State and one in Alaska. But neither version can be confirmed by official sources. It's enough for the file to be transferred to Anchorage police.
I first became involved, I think it was back on December 15th, 2010.
Investigators, including Detective John Foraker, visit Mike right away.
When we get to Mike's house, we knock on the door, Mike answers, and we ask about Angela. And Mike says, well, I just gotta tell you, I made the story about Angela's death up.
Mike says, in fact, Angela is very much alive, but has fallen off the wagon hard.
He told them that his explanation to her mother, Kathy, was to protect Kathy from the emotional hurt that would come if Kathy knew that Angela had returned to a life of drugs. It's very unusual that someone would die and we wouldn't know about that. Angela's situation was a little different, however. She had a sort of a vagabond existence.
She'd been married approximately 5 times. In our database, I saw that she had approximately 26 different aliases. She had 4 different social security numbers, 4 dates of birth. So I realized at that time that it was gonna be difficult. If she truly did just want to disappear, it was gonna be hard to locate her. Mike said that Angela was tired of living in Alaska. He was tired of being in their relationship, and she wanted to leave.
But there's more to the story, and while Mike doesn't know it, he's about to give police their first big lead.
Mike said that Angela asked for some money because she didn't have any money and she needed money to leave.
The detectives followed up on this sort of walkaway story by asking where the money came from.
Mike said reluctantly that he took $5,000 out of a safe that they had in the house.
And another $5,000 from a bank account that he had locally.
She literally walked out of the house, and that's the last he saw of his wife.
And that really opened the door up for the rest of the investigation.
Thank you so much.
Isn't just open. Soon, it's blown away.
Mike was arrested back in the early 80s for a felony theft.
And I've been sitting behind that desk for a long time, and I thought I had a pretty good judge of character.
Angela Dixiano is reported missing 6 months after her obituary is published. The report prompts police to obtain a warrant to look into her husband Mike Dixiano's bank accounts to see if he actually gave her enough cash to go off-grid, as he claims she did. They also run a background check on him. But when they go digging into Mike's past, they find a lot more than they bargained for.
Mike was arrested back in the early 80s for a felony theft.
The charge? Embezzling money from a construction company where he used to work. There's a reason they didn't find it right away.
Mike Dixiano changed his name from William Michael Dix, D-I-X, to Dixiano.
As if someone was to just do a Google search or search criminal records for someone under the name Dixiano, the name Dix wouldn't really mean anything. So in a way, he was able to distance himself from the past that he had in the 80s.
The next bombshell, when police gain access to Mike's bank accounts, is even more explosive.
Mike had an account in his own name, and also that he had a joint account with Sam.
Sam is Mike's former client and current friend who lives humbly in an Anchorage trailer park.
We found out that Sam was the beneficiary of a multi-million dollar trust fund. His father was a wealthy physicist, and when he died, he left this fortune for his son.
There was over $3 million in the trust account.
Never would have thought it in a million years. No vehicle, no trappings, just very simple guy.
Sam, yeah, hold on for a second.
Sam has full access to those millions after the death of his father in New Jersey in 2006.
What's a trust fund?
William Michael Dix, D-I-X, decided the day after Sam's father died to change his name to Dixiano. So it seemed pretty clear that it wasn't just a coincidence that he changed his name the next day.
They learn that Mike and Angela's house on Lake Ridge Road was bought with Sam's money, then signed over to Mike.
Mike convinced Sam to sign over power of attorney, which basically meant that Mike could do anything. He could access bank accounts, he could make purchases in Sam's name. I don't think Sam really understood what power of attorney meant.
An initial lump sum of $600,000 disappears in months. And in 2010 alone, there are five subsequent deposits of $20,000 put into Sam's joint account. Within days, sometimes hours, that money is transferred into Mike's private account and withdrawn.
That money was then used to buy cars, to buy artwork for the house, to fund trips to Hawaii.
He was going tanning every other day or so. He had an expensive gym membership that he was using. He was getting his hair done at a high-end salon on a weekly basis.
There were 22 cars were bought and sold in the time from when he started controlling Sam to the point at which this investigation was concluded.
When investigators meet Sam for the first time, he tells them Mike is a great friend whom he trusts with his life.
Sam knew that there was money. He didn't know where the money was going. And what Mike had told him was that the trust fund that had been established for Sam wasn't willing to provide money to Sam, and Sam believed that he needed Mike's help to get that money.
On January 6, 2011, Mike, now 61 years old, is arrested on charges of forgery, theft, and scheming to defraud his former client, Sam. It's a shock to the community, especially given his role as a counselor. And then police make another discovery.
In Mike's house, we found a transcript from Notre Dame with his grades and a diploma on the wall from Notre Dame. The investigation revealed that he had never been a student or a graduate in Notre Dame.
In light of these revelations about Mike, police turn their attention back to Angela. Has she really fallen off the wagon and left Anchorage? Or is there something more sinister at play?
Once we started looking into those bank accounts and we found out that there was this person, Sam, we started to think, well, maybe that threat to expose embezzlement has some legs.
I am going to tell them everything.
When Mike's house is searched, they learn Mike had renovations done just weeks after Angela went missing.
Mike's house stood out because there was brand new carpet. So the detectives received a phone call from a carpet contractor the day after Mike was arrested.
He remembered installing carpet. He saw a little bit of blood underneath a transition strip when he pulled it up.
He had asked Mike about that, and Mike said that his dog had died and blood on the floor. The contractor thought that was unusual because he saw the dog prints through the paint.
Dead dogs do not walk on paint.
Police are convinced the blood is Angela's.
It was sort of a needle in a haystack. I mean, there is a lot of ground out there. There's a lot of wilderness in Alaska for a body to just disappear.
There are obviously raging glacial rivers, the oceans next door. There are big mountain passes where bodies could be dumped.
The counts against Mike in the scheme to defraud Sam are so numerous, the prosecution is in a position to make a deal. They offer Mike a lesser sentence if he fesses up and tells them where to find Angela's remains.
It was hard. It was hard to make that decision. Frankly, my colleagues in the prosecutor's office, they thought we were giving Mike a deal that was too good. But we realized that in order to get that information that where we could find Angela's body, we needed to give him an incentive, and that's what we ultimately did.
Detectives say Dixiano's wife, 44-year-old Angela Dixiano, went missing last April after she threatened to expose her husband's ongoing fraud scheme.
In May 2012, Mike admits to beating his wife to death shortly after she was released from police custody on April 18, 2010. Mike tries to claim it was self-defense.
Don't touch me! I'm telling you right now, do not touch me!
He said that an unknown man came and threatened him with a gun. That man had left. Angela remained, and he felt threatened by her because she had a gun, and he had to kill her with a baseball bat.
And that he hit her multiple times in the head until she was lifeless.
There was a lot of blood. She was gasping for breath. He got down and continued to beat her after she was down on the ground. He was really creating the self-defense scenario, and his attorney really had to intervene with him and explain to him that he was required to accept responsibility. His plea eliminated his ability to claim any of those defenses. And his attorney had to point out to him that at a certain point she was down on the ground and that he continued to strike her, well after the point that any reasonable person could have been a threat to Mike.
It's obvious that Angela did know that there was a crime being committed. It's obvious that she, to some extent, benefited from that she lived off the proceeds of it. What's also obvious is that she had no control over this. Mike controlled all the money. He controlled the money, and that's how he controlled Angela.
But police and prosecutors believe when Mike started to mistreat her, she became increasingly vocal in her threats. Until he silences her forever.
Angela's threat was, "You son of a bitch, I'm going to expose the embezzlement." And that was really important because it created a motive for Mike to kill Angela. The haircuts, the tanning, the fancy dinners, the telling people he was a successful businessman who had cashed out, telling people that he traveled at the exclusive resorts in Hawaii on a regular basis, having the expensive cars, being in a car club. He liked people to think that he was a high roller. He liked to live that way, and he didn't want to give that up.
To keep that lifestyle, to hang on to that control that he has over Sam, is the reason that he killed Angela.
Mike told us that he actually kept Angela's body out in the garage for a couple days before loading her up into the back of the PT Cruiser.
He said he didn't get that far, and he ended up just pulling off on the side of the road and dumping her off sort of a steep embankment and then watching her slide down into a resting place in some trees.
It was the next day when myself and three other members of the Anchorage Police Department were able to go back to that location. And after a couple hours of searching, we were able to find Angela's remains.
I think Mike had constructed a house of cards, and Angela, despite all of her difficulties and problems in life, had the power to bring it down.
Mike had a lot to lose. If Angela really told the world everything she knew, he could have ended up in jail. There's no doubt in my mind that the way that Mike chose to kill Angela was filled with rage. He didn't just want her gone. He wanted her suffering, and he wanted to make good and sure that she was dead.
Premeditation doesn't have to mean that the person sat there for 6 months and picked the exact place, the exact time, the exact manner of death. Premeditation can mean that Mike sits there and hears Angela threaten to expose his crimes, and in the next 3 seconds decides that he's not going to let that happen.
Mike looked like a good guy. I mean, he was literally the ultimate wolf in sheep's clothing. Everything from the outside looked like he was an upstanding, kind, and caring person. On the inside, fraud, lies, and deceit.
Mike is ordered to pay restitution to Sam to the tune of $5 million.
I never got the impression that Sam cared about the money. It was the betrayal of the friendship that hurt him the most. And the newspaper kind of made it sound like, how did this guy not know that this was going on? Sam is not a fool. Mike was very, very good at what he was doing.
Eventually, a DNA test confirms the blood found in the Lake Ridge house is Angela's. And in the autumn of 2012, William Mike Dixiano, 63, is convicted of theft and second-degree murder and sentenced to 20 years in prison.
It was brutal. It had to be terrifying for Angela. It makes me sick to my stomach. How could somebody do that to somebody they supposedly love? It was devastating. It hurt. I hate him. I hate him.
He's a murderer. He's a convicted murderer, and he will be for the rest of his life.
They say he may die in prison. To me, that still does not make it okay.
All the stuff that happened to her, she was still a beautiful person inside. She had a heart of gold. And she was a beautiful person.
I really, really miss her. I do.